and a total ban on the use of Irish airspace for the transfer of lethal weapons to Israel.
International law is there for a reason. So Israel needs to adhere to international law. That's all we're asking for. Please adhere to international law. And if everyone done that, we wouldn't have ended up here in the first place.
Official figures indicate that nearly 59,000 Palestinians, mostly women and children, have been killed by Israeli forces since October 2023. The real death toll is likely far higher. Meanwhile, famine is now imminent. The long-anticipated Occupied Territories Bill is expected to be introduced in Ireland this September. If passed, the legislation would ban trade with companies operating in illegal Israeli settlements. In recent days, high-profile political figures in the United States have been mounting pressure on the Irish government to scrap the bill, threatening negative economic consequences if it goes ahead. But these activists are demanding that political leaders here do not capitulate to that pressure. Jerome Hughes, Dublin.
The echoes of the Iran-Iraq war still speak through walls. At Tehran's Holy Defense Museum, a delegation of foreign journalists walks through the scenes of sacrifice, endurance and defiance. An immersive journey into the eight-year imposed war, where a nation bled but never broke.
Quite striking what they did, tried to capture the atmosphere of how it was, and also to show it to other people who didn't went through the war, who didn't live through the war, and don't have actual account of it. So it's pretty amazing what they've done.
The Holy Defense Museum in Tehran stands as both a memorial and a mirror of Iran's resilience.
The first impression upon entering this museum is a deep sense of the Iranian people's extraordinary resilience and unwavering determination. Despite enduring severe hardships during the eight-year war, when virtually the entire world stood against Iran, they persevered. Even in the challenging years following the revolution, Iran managed to overcome immense obstacles, ultimately emerging victorious and displaying remarkable strength.
From reconstructed front lines to artifacts of fallen soldiers, the museum offers more than history. It conveys a message that victory comes not just through arms, but through faith and national unity. The journalists listening closely as the guides explain how the Iranian people, civilians and soldiers alike, stood shoulder to shoulder to defend their homeland. The experience led the visiting journalists to draw powerful parallels between Iran's wartime past and its present-day resistance to foreign aggression.
Things like peace through strength and, you know, peace through war, all this just nonsense. It's nonsense. And what I'm taking from this museum is Iran never sought out war or aggression upon anyone. And all of the war, the imposed wars upon Iran, they never sought that out. It was imposed upon them by imperial powers.
As far as these foreign journalists are concerned, the museum underscores how, for Iranians, defending the homeland is deeply rooted in their faith, culture, and collective identity.
Here, the visiting journalists see not only the scars of war, but the unity, resilience, and overwhelming faith that has led to the victory of the Iranian nation. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Italy's former Prime Minister and opposition five-step movement leader Giuseppe Conte has accused Giorgia Meloni's far-right government of violating international norms by maintaining military ties with the Israeli regime.
Si chiama genocidio.
What is happening in Gaza goes under the name of genocide. The genocidal intent is evident. Italy's government has made a mockery of the country by not requesting any sanctions against Israel. We expected you to at least tear up this memorandum, as Italy's military ties affect support violations of human rights and international norms. How do you intend to continue importing weapons from Israel? This is an act that makes you complicit in the violation of international law.
Conte's remarks came after Italy's Chamber of Deputies rejected a motion by opposition parties Five Star Movement, the Democratic Party, Greens and Left Alliance and Italian Socialist Party to suspend a 25-year-old Italy-Israel Memorandum of Understanding by 142 votes to 102. The memorandum revolves around Rome and Tel Aviv cooperation in the military sector. On June 8, while the Israeli regime's genocide in Gaza continued to escalate, Italy's government renewed its military cooperation agreement with Tel Aviv. This memorandum of understanding, in place since 2005, is automatically renewed every 5 years, unless one of the two parties explicitly decides to suspend or terminate it. In late May, in response to the regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza, the regional governments of Puglia and Emilia-Romagna formally severed all institutional ties with the Israeli regime. Italy's national government has not even been able to speak a word of solidarity for the thousands of civilian Gazans slaughtered by war criminal Benjamin Netanyahu.
C'è una sudditanza che giustifica.
Italy is utterly subjugated to Israel. We keep supplying Tel Aviv with military materials, including ammonium nitrate and tritium, and importing weapons from Israel. The amount of arms we imported tripled in 2024 compared to the year before.
Our motion was a strong message given by all opposition forces in the face of Netanyahu's brutal attacks that continue to kill Gazans and hitting even a Catholic church in the Strip. Our government must condemn once and for all Israelis' extermination of Palestinians.
Italy is the third Israeli regime's arms supplier following the US and Germany. Max Civili, Rome.
Dozens gathered on Khalid bin al-Walid Street in Damascus, rejecting Israeli aggression and expressing firm support for Syria's unity. The strikes, which hit near residential areas, were seen as a provocation aimed at deepening internal strife. Protesters raised Syrian flags and voiced rejection of sectarianism, foreign plots, and war. Many see the airstrikes as part of a wider plan to reignite conflict and shatter the country's fragile recovery. Chants echoed through the streets. No to treason, no to foreign intervention. Protesters called for civil peace and solidarity with Soweda, vowing to defend every inch of Syrian territory against division and outside manipulation. From Damascus to Soweda, Syrians are speaking in one voice. No to war, no to division. As Israeli airstrikes try to fracture the country, citizens respond with defiance and unity stronger than ever. Ali Mohammed, Damascus.
His name may not have made headlines, but to those who knew him, Hajj Ramazan was a legend. Now, in the wake of his martyrdom, an entire nation commemorates the life and sacrifice of Major General Mohammad Said Izadi, known by friends and peers as Hajj Ramazan.
He dedicated over 35 years of his life to the Palestinian resistance. He was a key figure in supporting Palestine, as he was head of the division in charge. His unwavering commitment shaped the resistance movement and earned him respect for his dedication to the Palestinian cause.
A key force behind Iran's support for Palestine, he was revered for his humility. His martyrdom in the recent Israeli aggression has drawn widespread condemnation and renewed vows to carry forward his mission. A special tribute video played during the memorial left many in attendance deeply moved, as they admitted they had never realized just how instrumental Hajj Ramazan was in support for the Palestinian resistance.
Those who support Israel are stabbing Palestine in the back, and those who martyr the supporters of the resistance are betraying Palestine. What this revered martyr left behind is a legacy of resistance. We must keep his memory alive by continuing his path in the fight against oppression. What better honor than to sacrifice for this valuable cause?
This memorial affirms a collective vow to preserve the memory of martyr Hajj Ramazan and continue his unwavering support for the resistance, echoing across generations and all who stand for justice. Honoring this revered martyr, his steadfast commitment to defending and supporting Palestine inspires continued resistance. Gisu Misha Ahmadi, Tehran.
He is The Voice of Gaza, How to Survive a War Zone, a documentary that follows 13-year-old Abdullah as he guides viewers through the devastation of his hometown. In February, the BBC pulled the film from its video-on-demand service, the iPlayer, after it turned out Abdullah's father was a civilian official in the Hamas government. The BBC said it didn't know about his family connections. Now Britain's media regulator Ofcom is investigating whether viewers were misled. But critics are asking why Ofcom has chosen this moment to act when the BBC has a decades-long record of bias that has consistently favored Israel.
Hearing that Ofcom will investigate this, the BBC didn't come as a shock at all. Reason being is we've seen regulators across the board, from the charity regulator to Ofcom to the regulators of print media, coming in essentially to rescue the pro-Zionist narrative whenever it's in trouble. And here it's continuing that same trajectory of enabling, defending, obfuscating from Israel's live stream genocide that's happening now in Gaza.
Over months, the public broadcaster has been vilified by the public over its pro-Israel bias, with no action from Ofcom. But a Palestinian child documenting genocide crossed the line.
What's actually happening here? And what's happening here is that a powerful, hard-hitting documentary exposing the realities on the ground in Gaza, demonstrating clearly through eyewitness testimony and experiences on the ground what's taking place day to day in the lived experience of Gazans, living through the Israeli brutality, the blockade, the starvation, the genocide. And we're being told, hold on, Palestinians are disingenuous. We cannot trust their testimony. And even their children could be spoon-fed lines about how devastating the circumstances is.
Last month, the BBC pulled another documentary, Gaza, Doctors Under Attack, over what it called concerns about impartiality. The film was instead aired by two separate broadcasters, one in Britain, the other in the U.S. Before that, calls for the director general of the BBC, Tim Davie, to resign for airing Palestine solidarity, including this chant by musician Bob Villain at the Glastonbury Music Festival.
Critics say this is not about media standards, it's about policing Palestinian voices while letting decades of pro-Israel distortion pass unchecked. For many years, Ofcom in that building remained silent. It's speaking now, only, they say, to silence Palestinians. Cyprus of London.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of a speech delivered on November 27th by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with besiegees from throughout the country.
In those rich countries ruled by the system of domination, countries such as the U.S. and some European countries which are wealthy, people die of hunger on the streets. As for the people in other countries, they display injustice as much as they can. It is against freedom as well. The most important kind of freedom for a nation is the public freedom of countries. In other words, independence. Once, I said that independence means the freedom of nations. When we speak about freedom, We are speaking about the freedom of nations so that they can freely do what they want to do. The system of domination is against such freedom. One day with colonialism, another day with neocolonialism, and today with modern methods, the methods used in soft wars, they create a disastrous situation for nations. Of course, wherever necessary, they bring their armed forces to the arena, and they do not have any scruples whatsoever.
A very dangerous plot was foiled by the people themselves.
In the present time, the Americans have entered the eastern part of the Euphrates in Syria, and they say they're there for the sake of oil. Is that area your home? It belongs to another country. But they say that they have shown their presence because there is oil there and that they have come for oil. They do not feel embarrassed to acknowledge this, and they say it openly. Or they enter a country such as Iraq without any permission. They do not seek the permission of the government of that country, and they do not go to the capital. Rather, they go to their own bases because they have some bases there. This signifies that they officially insult the freedom and independence of nations. So the system of domination is both anti-justice and anti-freedom. Islam is the flag bearer of justice and freedom. Islam is the flag bearer of justice. It is the flag bearer of freedom, and it does so without any considerations and in an outspoken manner. Islam does not hide its claims. It confronts oppression and injustice in an outspoken manner.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
again their rightful home, 'cause Philistines where they belong. All the essence of your courage and your strength in the heartbeat of the land where our love's on.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sesti. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Humanitarian aid, access to food, water, and medicine has long been considered a fundamental red line that governs conduct during war, conflicts, and even genocide. UN agencies, the Red Cross, doctors, and journalists have traditionally been granted immunity in these situations, regardless of the brutality unfolding around them. But the recent events in Gaza, where Israel's actions has rewritten international law through the bloodshed of Palestinians and the silence of the world, has shattered this principle. In the past month alone, at least 109 Palestinians have been killed at aid distribution centers operated by the U.S.-Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Just today, 36 desperate Palestinians lost their lives. The UN no longer wants a famine in Gaza. It declares that famine is already here. We now live in a world that has grown disturbingly accustomed to watching children literally starve to death. This is the reality we'll examine today on The Spotlight.
Famine warnings in Gaza are ignored. The United Nations says the Israeli siege has left hundreds of thousands of children under the age of 5 malnourished. The only sliver of hope for starving civilians in Gaza is the U.S.-administered aid centers that are essentially killing machines.
As of the 13th of July, we have recorded 875 people killed in Gaza while trying to get food. 674 of them were killed in the vicinity of GHF sites.
And the deliberate targeting of aid-seeking civilians has been clearly recounted by survivors.
They started shooting at us, and we lied down on the ground. Tanks and military vehicles arrived. Soldiers got out of them and started shooting at people while they were on the ground. Then they withdrew, and we started checking ourselves, and there were about 20 martyrs.
The United Nations has openly called these American sites a death trap and stressed Israel's obligation to allow more aid in.
People are being killed simply trying to feed themselves and their families. The search for food must never be a death sentence. Let me be clear. Israel as the occupying power is required by international law to agree to and to facilitate humanitarian relief. Meanwhile, humanitarian operations continue to be strangled.
UN representatives have also criticized the U.S.-backed aid centers, saying they violate international principles.
Tragic incidents in Gaza near GHF sites remind us that there are no blurred lines with regard to the respect of international humanitarian law.
Far from addressing humanitarian issues, these mechanisms have become symbols of dishonoring human dignity and putting the lives of those in need at risk.
Yet the Israeli regime continues to kill those seeking aid, and the international community fails to take tangible action. And even though Palestinians remain resilient, the world should not ignore its duty to protect innocent lives.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And now let us bring in our guest joining us now from Ramallah. We have Saad Nimr, Professor of Political Science at Birzeit University. We also have Mohsin Saleh, academic and political commentator, joining us from Beirut. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. So this is an issue you guys are well familiar with, but let us start from Ramallah first with Mr. Saad Nimr. The current impact of the Israeli atrocities and the blockade of aid on Gaza's civilian, especially the young population, in your opinion, how will that change going forward? The way the world is going to be looking at war, the engagement of war, or any sort of conflict going forward?
Well, I think even for today it became, you know, unbearable totally what's going on in Gaza, and especially when you are mentioning the issue of hunger and thirst for the Palestinian people in Gaza. What the world is doing, the world is conspiring against the Palestinians in Gaza. This is, I mean, you know, especially Western countries, apart from, you know, a few only, maybe we can, put an exception for them. But the rest are all participants in this genocidal war, and especially with hunger. Everyone is seeing what's going on. When we are talking about numbers, so far we are talking about 69 children died because of hunger so far. Today we have three died of hunger, this day. We are talking about 60,000 other children are under the threat of being killed and died because of hunger. We are talking about 55,000 women who are pregnant, and maybe they will be, can't even give birth, or the children can't get enough food and milk, the babies, I mean. And this is also under this danger. What we are talking about here is a kind of a war which is designed in a way to exterminate the Palestinians in Gaza. And what is the reaction of the world? The reaction of the world is silence. Now Gaza is eating this word silence. That's what they eat in Gaza. What the world is doing is doing nothing to what's going on. Where is the United Nations? Why United Nations can't even discuss this issue? It became unbearable. It became now unstoppable by Israel. What about the European countries? As I said, apart from a few countries here and there, but mostly, where are the 57 Islamic countries, including Arab countries. Where are they? I mean, okay, don't send rockets to Israel. Don't fight with Israel, but at least send some food, for God's sake. Put some pressure. Make some really big noise about what's going on. I'm really, really sorry. I'm sorry today. I'm angry because what's going on is became now over even that you can think of what's going on. People are dying in front of our eyes, in on screens, and no one is doing anything, and no one wanted to do anything.
Okay, stay with me. I want to cross over now to Beirut, to Mr. Mohsen Saleh. Mr. Mohsen Saleh, you just heard what our previous guest said about 60,000 children who are at the verge of, you know, starving to death. And we have a situation, like you mentioned, where the Arabs, in the recent visit by Trump, were able to give trillions of dollars. Like you mentioned, no one is expecting any missiles to be sent, but at least some sort of political pressure to be applied to the Americans to allow for at least aid to come in, just like some sort of political pressure was applied to assist Syria to lift some of its sanctions. Why do you think there is this inability of the Arabs to collectively act to protect Gaza in whatever capacity they can?
Good evening to you and to your guest, and greetings, all the greetings to the audiences in Palestine, and as well in the Arab and the Islamic world and the international community, who are having this feeling towards this genocide, this massacres, daily massacres in Gaza. And unfortunately, Arabs and the what so-called the international community or the society in the United States and in the Arab world, all of them, they are looking at this catastrophe without paying any kind of feeling or having passion or compassion towards these people, these children, these women who are looking for food and looking for life and looking for a safe place, safe haven in order to live. Unfortunately, this international community has been seeing and looking and to this problem without raising finger, without raising voice, without even condemning such acts of the of these atrocities of the Zionists. And also they talk about more dangerous thing that Witkoff or others talk to Katz or some of the Israelis, especially the Mossad, talking about delivering the Palestinians as if they are commodities to Libya and Ethiopia and also to Indonesia. It's unfortunate to see this problem is taking these ramifications in all aspects, in terms of nationality, in terms of religion, in terms of homeland, in terms of culture, and all kinds of concepts and technical terms that we use in the media. I guess Gaza is fighting alone, well, with some help from Yemen, from taban the axis of resistance, which will come back soon, will come back, because this international community cannot stay like this. There are people who are fighting and who are collecting themselves and their efforts in order to defend Palestine and defend Gaza. And soon will the people in Palestine and the Arab world will have this revolt and rebellion against these plans and these conspiracies against the Palestinians, and Palestine will be the beginning. What's going on in Syria, what's going on in Lebanon, what's going on in Iraq and other places, I guess it's in the same track, in the same way of understanding. The United States and the Israelis, of course, the Zionists, are creating this chaos in order, what's so-called, to create a new Middle East, as Netanyahu expressed it, according to his greediness and according to his inhumane understanding of the relationship between the Arabs and the Israelis, and of course the international community. I would say I would blame, not only blame, condemn the Arab silence about what's happening in Gaza, especially those who are negotiating the truce and the ceasefire in Gaza. Aren't they saying seeing what's happening in Gaza every day? The Israelis, the Zionists, these criminals are killing more than 100 Palestinians. That's between children and women who are seeking food, seeking a piece of bread in order to eat and try to satiate, if they satiate, their stomach and their food and yes. their hunger. I would say that these Arabs take the responsibility as the Americans, as the European Union, but the Arabs can be blamed more because they are on the borders. Yes. What are they doing except talking to the Israelis?
Yes.
You should cut. You should boycott all kinds of relations with this usurpation and with this occupation and with this killing. They are witnesses for these crimes.
Yes. Okay, stay with me. Let's cross over back to Ramallah. I guess Israel, in some aspects, can now claim that some of its war goals has been realized. Why? Because from the very beginning, Yon Golant said that when the genocide began, there will be no food, there will be no water, there will be no electricity. Everything will be cut off. And we saw the systematic attack on the UNRWA, on, you know, food aid companies and organizations that came to try to replace the UNRWA, and then the United States tried the pair where they claim it's going to be the pair they're going to be using to bring aid in. That failed, and now we have the, what is it called, the Gaza, so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation that the UN has now called a debt trap. We spoke to our correspondent earlier today, and he said a bag of flour now costs $1,000. People are literally going 5 days without food. In your opinion, how can the international community, or whatever is left of it, deal with this kind of fundamental fracture in human existence? Because it's not going to go away, is it?
Yes, that's absolutely right. What they can do lots of things. They can do a lot, as a matter of fact, in ending this this situation. But the question is whether they can or whether they want to do something about it. This is the problem. They have the ability to do it. They can boycott Israel. They can force Israel. They can go to the United Nations General Assembly. They can go to the Security Council. They can force Israel to do it. They can stop all kind of relationship with Israel if they continue with this. Arab countries, as your guest also mentioned, especially Egypt, who have all these food and aid on their borders, it's a matter of their own supremacy over Rafah crossing, and it's a matter of supremacy over their own land. And this crossing is between the Palestinians and Egypt, so they can open it, forced to open it, in spite of everything. They can do all these kind of things. There are a lot of things they can do. But the question is whether they are willing to do that or not. And this is the problem. That's why we are saying that all these countries, and especially Arab countries, are conspiring with the Israelis and the Americans against the Palestinian people. And we hold them responsibility for this massacre is going on in and genocide war. They are responsible for what's going on. Because and even the European countries and all other countries who did not do anything at all, once you know what's going on and you see what's going on and you do nothing at all, it means that you are participating in this crime. So that's exactly the situation. Now, for the UNRWA announced today that they have enough food and aid for Gaza enough for 3 months for all the people in Gaza, to 2.3 million people in Gaza. They have enough food for them and water and supplies for 3 months at least. But all that aid is stuck at the borders, either in Rafah or in the other Israeli crossings. And Israel and the Americans are not allowing at all this kind of help and aid to get into Gaza. So this is a United Nations organization. So what the United Nations should do, and the United Nations now, they are sending all these reports. They're talking about everything, and but at the same time, they are doing nothing, because they know that if there is a kind of a resolution coming from the Security Council, the American will stand to help Israel and to block and to veto any kind of resolution. And that's why we are saying that we should go to the General Assembly and try to force Security Council under the 7th article to do something about what's going on, and it is immediately. Otherwise, all these countries are participants in this massacre and in this genocidal war.
Okay. Let's cross over back to Beirut. We had a speech from Abu Ubaidah a few days ago, I think it was yesterday, where many are saying that that is one of his most direct, speech yet, where he actually named some of the countries that refused to participate to assist Gaza, and also talk about the fact that resistance operations continues across Gaza despite the inhumane condition that exists. And you also mentioned the fact that the resistance will not be able to sit out and continue to wait as this unimaginable catastrophe unfolds before the eyes of the world. In your opinion, what do you think may happen? Because many have already said that the resistance in Lebanon perhaps is weak, the resistance in Iraq is tied, the resistance in Gaza has been fighting on empty stomach for almost 2 years. Iran has gone to recently 12 days of altercation with the Israeli regime. What can the resistance do in this situation?
Well, as I always say and insist on, the access of resistance is strong and will come back stronger. And the operations in Gaza show that, and it's an evident for everybody that they continue to fight. And the Israelis, every day they say it's a dangerous day, it's a difficult day for them and for their soldiers and for their officers in Gaza, in Khan Yunis, in South Gaza, and in Nusayrat, and everywhere you will see operations. And they say that now, some of their analysts, political analysts, saying that we cannot uproot, or we cannot kill, or we cannot finish Hamas. That's why we should go to ceasefire in order to return their hostages. I would say that in spite of all this aggression from these Zionists, with the approval of the United States and the Western community, it's about time, as Abu Ubaidah said, for the Arabs, most of them, the elites in the political and for the cultural and for the social influences, I would say that they should all go to this battle in a one voice, in a unified voice, that saying stop this massacre, stop this genocidal war against Gaza. And the resistance in Lebanon is not that weak. Yes. In Yemen, they are sending these missiles into the airport of Lead, and also to all parts, to Eilat and other places. So we are talking about a battle, an open war with this occupation, in spite of this. I would say the Arab humiliation and defeat in their psychological spirit and in their soul and in their mind, they cooperate with this enemy in order to stop this resistance and in order to besiege this resistance. But I would say there is no option. between resistance and other choices.
Okay.
The resistance is our destiny.
Okay.
The resistance, we, in order to go for freedom, we have, and to liberate Gaza and other places, we have to fight till the end, because we need this kind of resistance. It's a historical resistance in Gaza for 21 months. They are continuing in spite of all these losses.
Yes,
but
okay.
I'm
so sorry to cut you short because we are out of time.
Freedom fighters, these strugglers who are fighting for these people who are strangled in Gaza.
Yes, okay, I'm sorry to cut you short. Finally, I just want to go to our guest in Ramallah in less than a minute, if you can, your final thought as a Palestinian academic, as someone who has witnessed more than half of this occupation and seen it with your own eyes. You grew up with it. Your final word, please, in less than a minute, if you can.
Well, I do agree with your guest from Beirut. We have to fight back. There is no other option in front of us. For the last 30 years, we tried the peace process and we tried negotiations, but this colonial aggression called Israel, this colonial state called Israel, definitely are not going to give the Palestinians anything, and there is no way to be together with the Israelis in our negotiations. The only way is to resist the occupation, to resist this country, and to end this country totally. This is the only option in front of the Palestinians, either to live as slaves under the Israelis or to fight back to end this entity totally and to end this colonial state.
Okay. End the colonial state. That is where we will end this night's spotlight as well. Thank you so much to our guests for joining us. Saad Nimeris, professor of political science, who joined us from Ramallah. We also have Mohsin Saleh, academic and political commentator, joining us from Beirut. Thank you so much for staying with us. From me, Zainab, and the rest of the team, goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 146 to 148 of chapter Ali Imran from the Holy Quran, recited by Ali Parisgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa ka'ayyim min nabiyyin qatala ma'ahu ribbiyyuna kathir ربنا اغفر لنا ذنوبنا وإسرافنا في أمرنا وثبت أقدامنا ربنا اغفر لنا ذنوبنا وإسرافنا في أمرنا وثبت أقدامنا وانصرنا على القوم الكافرين فآتاهم الله ثواب الدنيا وحسن ثواب الآخرة والله يحب المحسنين فآتاهم الله ثواب الدنيا وحسن ثواب الآخرة والله يحب المحسنين.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. And how many a prophet has fought with whom were many worshippers of the Lord. So they did not become weak-hearted on account of what befell them in Allah's way, nor did they weaken, nor did they abase themselves. And Allah loves the patient. And their saying was no other than that they said, Our Lord, forgive us our faults and our extravagance in our affairs.